Hello, and welcome to the Jazz Podcast. I am your host, Rob Cope. Today's episode 42, and we're joined by Sony recording artist, Ashley Henry. This is a track called Deja Vu from Ashley's first EP. When I first met Ashley, he was just a kid in town trying to make a name for himself. Now look what's happened. But just before we get to Ashley, it's time to have a chat with my old partner in crime, Dan. Dan, how's it going?
Doing well, thanks, Rob. How are you doing?
I'm very good. Oh, it's been such a long time. What a pleasure it is.
It's been a while, yeah. Well, you've been away travelling, have you?
Yeah, that's right. I went away for a month, so I pre-recorded a load of those shows that came out the last few weeks, which is why they were tragically devoid of our delightful conversations.
Oh, well, yeah, it's not really a jazz podcast if we're not chatting at the beginning.
It's not, really. Actually, although, of course, it's guests that make this show tick. A lot of people have said to me in the past that they're surprised that this is their favorite bit.
Right.
Probably because it's the bit most people listen to, and then they see that the show is an hour long and turn
it
off.
Give up. Yeah, I can imagine. I'd do the same.
Become exhausted. Yep.
So where were you? Were you in
New Zealand? I went to New Zealand, yeah. It was great. It's very nice. Hey, you know, over in New Zealand, being a musician is on the future development list.
What does that mean?
It means if you want to emigrate there, the government will give you the maximum score possible on their immigration point system for your job.
Well, there you go.
Yeah.
Are you considering it?
No. I mean... No. It's such a nice place to go. Everyone's so laid back and the weather's great. The scenery's great. And I mean, I could live in Wellington if Peter Jackson wanted to, you know, some saxophone on his next film
score.
Yeah, then I'd move. But I don't know how much of a vibrant jazz scene there is. It's hard to tell.
Do we have any listeners from New Zealand?
Let's check the map because we used to.
Maybe we could ask them.
Here we go. Let's see what we've got on the cards here.
Yeah.
Right now, 1% of our plays are coming from Australia and New Zealand.
Well, that's pretty good.
Yeah. Yeah, that's solid.
I mean, 1% of a very small number.
I'll give you an exact number. It's 20 plays right now, based on our last 10 shows.
Right.
But here's something. There is people in every continent of the world listening to the Jazz Podcast.
There you go.
Tenuous, but incredibly true all the same.
Or someone with like a good proxy server.
Oh, yeah, that's annoying.
Just jumping around.
People with, what are they called? The thing where you VPN.
Yeah.
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 So we have a sponsor for the show, the Jazz Podcast.
We've got a sponsor.
Yes, it's sponsored by an Englishman's Mild Adventures.
Is this your album?
No, it's my new TV web series.
Okay, nice. Oh, I got excited that we might actually make some money.
I know.
Or that we might Rob, you're just
that we might lose less money for once.
Okay.
Yeah, so that's great news.
So tell us more about this.
Yes.
Adventure of an Englishman.
Yeah, but a brand new web series of adventure travel diaries that are released weekly, featuring me traveling around.
Great.
I thought of a great tagline for it. Like, if you like me but you hate jazz, this is the show for you.
Yes, I think for most people it's the other way around, though, Rob.
Yeah.
Oh, well, I have to say to the listeners, I have seen some of your video editing skills.
Oh yeah, I sent you some.
Even though I have not seen these particular ones, it will definitely be worth your time.
I did send you a few previews, although I didn't tell you what it was.
I didn't watch them, Rob.
Oh my god! I was trying to, you know, test the waters.
Okay.
Yeah, it's
I'll check it out.
It's good.
So, you know, you should really be using your video making skills on your other project though, your other video project.
Funnily enough, I was going to talk about the film. Part of the point of making those episodes was just to get loads of practice on Final Cut.
Okay, that's fair enough.
Lots of training, lots of excuses to edit and swap between projects. And it's quite a lot to, you know, a program like that, if you actually use it, it's a lot easier than watching tutorials. So,
yeah.
So the film, if you're not aware, making a film about Richard Turner, trumpet player, and I had a fundraising campaign that, because the page has been dormant for 6 months, it's been like officially closed.
Oh no.
I know, which is fine, because I didn't want anyone else donating, because then I'd actually have to find stuff to post again. It would be a nightmare. Mm. But it means that I can't send monthly updates anymore. So if you're itching for updates, then I'm just going to spew them out here on the Jazz Podcast every now and then.
Great.
Yeah. So right now, the situation is that I've got like a first round of interviews is finished.
Mm.
And I'm just transcribing them all. And then creating a script so then I can create like a timeline. It's quite a lot of work, actually.
Mm.
Not that I'm complaining, but when I told Richard's mum, Christine, that maybe like, what if it takes 5 years? She wasn't mad, but I'm glad I tested the waters with such a long time frame just in case. I don't think it's going to take that long, but yeah.
Have you set a date that you want to have it done by?
No, but what I have...
Why don't you do that?
At the moment, I'm trying out just making it compulsory that something gets done on it every single day.
Okay, well, that's good.
Every day of the week, something happens. So, yeah, so that's good news. And, one piece of tragic news. Gary the postman didn't even notice that I had gone.
Oh, no.
I know. So I don't think our relationship's quite in the place that I thought it was.
Sorry to hear that.
Yeah.
He didn't even he didn't leave a note for him or anything.
I should have done on my post box, but yeah, very upsetting. So,
probably, anyway, what have we got on today?
Ashley Henry. So let's check out one of his tracks, and then we'll get to the interview. This is called, I think it's pronounced, Demos.
Demos.
And yeah, if it's not, I'm sorry.
How do you spell that?
D E I M O S.
Mm.
It's from his first EP. Ashley Henry, welcome to the Jazz Podcast.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having me.
It's our pleasure. So let's do a kind of one of those talks where we try and deal with your whole life story.
Okay.
So tell us who you are.
Tell us who you are. Mm. Wow, so I was born in Southeast London in Crystal Palace. My parents are both from Jamaican heritage, so yeah, so much to cram into one question. I mean,
that, I'll break it down a bit. That's a good start. So you're a pianist, and you do you still live in Southeast London?
Yeah, I still live in Southeast London. I live in Crystal Palace near the football ground, actually.
Oh, sweet.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So, yeah, it's all good down here, man.
I bet it is.
I mean, there's quite a lot of us that live in Southeast London, like a few, quite a few jazz musicians on the London scene, on the kind of like new jazz sort of tip. So it seems like a kind of crazy coincidence in a way.
Yeah. This seems to happen a lot in London, where there's little pockets that are really interesting.
Yeah, like you have like Walthamstow and you have like, you know, like Haggerston sort of area as well, and like where loads of different, yeah, loads of different like groups of musicians live. It's, yeah, it's cool.
So when did you start playing the piano?
I started playing piano about age of six. Because we always had a piano in the house. Because my dad, he's a pianist. He doesn't like do music like, you know, as a profession. He's actually like a mortgage broker, but he comes from like a really musical family. So like everyone like either sings or plays an instrument. Sweet. And so he always used to like play piano in the house when he like got home from work or whatnot, and like play like Bach and what else did he play? Yeah, it's just like loads of Bach and loads of like Beethoven and like loads of different songs as well. And then I used to like try and imitate what he was doing, like a two finger sort of chopstick sort of version of what he was doing. So yeah, he decided to like get me lessons. He taught me for a little bit and then decided to get me a teacher after that. Mm-hmm. And then I kind of did the whole like classical sort of thing, went through the grades and all that sort of thing, but simultaneously still keeping up what I started. So like listening to things and imitating that. So simultaneously whilst doing the classical thing, I was like listening to like the music that was playing in my house, like the Stevies, the Marvin Gaye's, et cetera, and just like copying what I was hearing. And that was kind of like a gateway to jazz for me, because a lot of that stuff has like jazz harmony in it and all the conventional stuff that you need to know to, you know, for the building blocks of being a jazz musician, I guess.
Yeah. That's a wonderful way. It sounds like, actually, it's really interesting because that's almost exactly how I started.
Mm.
With like semi-professional father, you know, got some lessons from him, and then, well, yeah, basically all of what you just said, you can paste onto my life, and it's all true.
Oh, cool, that's cool. Okay. Yeah, yeah. It's crazy how like such an incredible journey can be started.
Yeah,
like you just, you know. As a young kid, you wouldn't think like where this will take you.
No, you just, I was just doing it because I was told to. It was very simple.
Yeah. Yeah, of course.
So are you from a big family?
I guess so. I've got like two older brothers, two older sisters. But I'm the only one out of the lot that like does music really. So yeah.
Was everyone taught when they were young? Or were you showing a particularly keen interest on this chopsticks technique?
Yeah, I was really keen on the chopsticks, really, to be honest. So, yeah, I showed like a really keen interest. So my parents decided to, you know, see where it would go in a way.
Yeah, totally.
Mm.
How did you that? So did you do all of the, classical piano exams?
I did, yeah. So I did not all the ABRSM grades, like I skipped a few, but I did the whole associate, right, sort of school.
And then how does that tie in with getting into jazz and deciding that you weren't going to like become a classically trained? Well, I guess you are classically trained, but, you know, like why jazz? Like, I mean, obviously listening to Stevie Wonder, I understand exactly why. but was there like a point in your life where you made a conscious decision, like I'm going to do jazz, you know, in spite of the grades and all that stuff?
Yeah, to be honest, where can I start at? So I finished my grades when I was at school. Then I went to then I went on to sixth form. I went to the Brit School, where at that point in my life, it kind of propelled me to so much different types and styles of music, and I made so many different friends from like different walks of life. I was no longer that dude from South London, you know. I was a student of music amongst loads of other people from around the world or around the country that, you know, all have their own story. Yeah. So
wait, is that like a A-level music vibe at this point?
Yeah. It's like sixth form. So you can go there to do your GCSEs, but my parents decided, you know, do your GCSEs at a normal school, then go to Brit. Because I like round the corner from there.
Oh, cool. And,
you know, my teachers at school were like, oh, yeah, you should go there. You know, it's free and there's some good teachers there and, you know, you'll meet some great people and stuff like that. So I was like, oh, you know, I'll audition. And so got a place there, went there. So just finished all my grades and stuff like that. And then, towards the end of it, I had a really good friend of mine, it's actually a jazz drummer, a guy called Fred Harper. So he put me on to like so much different music. We'd like go to each other's houses and just like to swap albums. Like at that time, actually, that's when like Spotify just came out. So we literally both got Spotify, and then we'd go to each other's house and be like, oh, have you listened to this album? Have you listened to this? And then he played me Summertime by Jason Rebello. And then I just remember just like after that piano solo, I was just like, oh my God, like what? A piano can be played like that? What is this? Like, this is crazy. Yeah. And from then I was like, okay, I want to do jazz. Like, you know, I guess a lot of jazz musicians have that one record or that one tune that makes you go, I don't care what I do in life as long as I can play like that kind of thing.
Yeah, it's really great that you can remember yours so specifically as well, you know. And I know it's a shame that Spotify is such a like source of evil, and you know, they don't like, you know, nobody gets paid enough for the plays because it's such a great directory to be able to find stuff that is like, you know, used to must have been impossible to track down. And now we can, like, same with YouTube. For me, there's loads of old Mike Brecker videos that I thought I'd, like, never see again. And suddenly everything's all over the internet.
I think, to be honest, like, the whole Spotify thing, the whole streaming thing is a catch-22 because simultaneously alongside the whole money thing, it has opened a lot more people like myself to like improvise music. And now Spotify has that thing where it's like, if you follow that artist, it's like, oh, you may like this person or you may like that person. And you get introduced to more stuff.
Yeah.
And they send you emails if they're in town as well. And if you can go and see their gig. So I think simultaneously it kind of supports jazz in a way, I think.
Yeah.
You know, it'll email you and tell you, oh, this person will be in town or...
Yeah, that's really cool. That's a nice... Yeah. That's a beautiful thing. So, what other... After Jason Rebello, where do you turn?
So, this is another interesting story. So, a girl who was in my class happened to be his niece.
Great. That's so convenient. Yeah.
So as soon as my friend Fred told me that, after he played me the record, my mission the next day when I went back into school was like, okay. I was just like, my friend Ella, I was just like, look, is Jason Rebello your uncle? Oh my God, like, I need lessons from him. Like, I just kept, like, being really persistent. Like, I need lessons, need lessons, need lessons. And then she finally went, look, he's playing at Ronnie Scott's with Troy Miller and the Stacey Brothers and Pino Palladino. Do you want to come down with my family? And I was like, yeah, sure. And then, like, really nice of her. She didn't have to do that. And then, so.
Wow, that's awesome.
After the gig, I helped him with his gear and stuff like that. And then, yeah, got chatting to him. And, yeah, he's, like, such a nice, lovely guy. And I asked for some lessons. He's like, yeah, absolutely. And, you know, took the time out of his, like, really busy schedule to, like, teach me and put me in the right direction. He was, like, at that time, I think he was still on the road with Jeff Beck, like, touring the world with him.
Yeah.
But at the same time, he still managed to, like, find time to, like, you know, give me some amazing guidance, which I'm, like, really grateful for. So that kind of got me started on my journey, really. And then, then I went on to Leeds to study.
Did you ever think you'd do anything else? Or is this just, like, you know, you just keep one phase to the next, you know, with the piano?
Yeah, it was more just curiosity, really. I always knew that I wanted to do music, but I wasn't quite sure specifically what it was I wanted to do musically, but I always knew that I wanted to do music. But then, yeah, just the whole, like, jazz journey kind of just set me on the straight and narrow, really.
Yeah.
You know, just... yeah, it's just very curious and always over enthusiastic, like going to jam sessions, watching, listening, learning. And I just wanted to soak up as much information as possible. And yeah, that was it for me, really. Yeah, as soon as I was like exposed to it in a certain way, that was kind of it for me, really.
Yeah. Before we talk about Leeds, I'm just curious for my own comedic purposes. What A levels did you do? Can you remember?
I did basically a Brit school. It's like a music beats, whatever strand you're in. So they have like music, technical theatre, dance. It's like a BTEC. So it's like equivalent to like 3 A levels. So you do that with your strand.
Yeah.
And then I also did a media A level.
Cool. That sounds like it'd be quite a useful thing to do as a musician.
I mean I really enjoyed it because I like writing, so, and a lot of it was writing, but simultaneously it kind of got a bit much, like doing the whole, you know, music thing, because it just got a lot. But it was good though. I really enjoyed it.
Has it helped you in life, having a media, like, education?
You know what? Actually thinking about it now, I think so, because in class we used to, like watch film clips and then have to really think meticulously about what's going on.
Yeah.
And I think I've applied that to my music studies, to be honest, just really trying to pay attention to detail as much as I can. Like, okay, why is this person, you know, playing this voicing like it is behind this soloist, or, you know, just little things like that. And why is this person playing this phrase, you know, along, you know, just really digging deep and trying to understand. So I think, yeah, like actually thinking about it, it's like, yeah, it definitely did help me actually.
Amazing.
Yeah, really interesting question actually.
Well, yeah, it just seems like it'd be really useful.
Yeah, definitely.
So let's talk about Leeds. Did you enjoy it up there?
Oh, I love Leeds. Like, yeah, definitely sort of the best 3 years of my life, like, outside of London, because apart from that, I don't think I've ever, like, stayed in a different part of the UK before. And after, like, touring around with this pop artist I was playing for during my gap year, I was just like, oh man, I want to study out of London or even out of the UK. I was, you know, think about maybe going to Amsterdam as well, because I had some friends up there. But then I also had a lot of friends up at Leeds College of Music. So I went up to visit for a little bit. And then, yeah, just the scene, the atmosphere, the musicians, the people, it was, yeah, it was amazing. The time I was up there, like, the scene was really kicking off. Loads of great bands that come out of Leeds, great musicians. And yeah, everyone was really friendly. It was just a really great atmosphere.
Yeah.
Yeah, loved it.
Who were your teachers while you were up there?
I had the same piano teacher for the whole 3 years. I had Les Chisnell.
Oh, Les. Oh, yeah, wonderful.
Yeah. So all my friends that went to Chet's are like, yeah, Les. So,
Les, I love that man. I've been hounding him so much. from like 2 years ago when we thought up this show, I've been nagging him. And he's just like, he's just so annoying and difficult when it comes to trying to interview him. I just think I'm insane for wanting to sit and talk about him for an hour.
I'd love to hear that interview, actually, because, like, he's so many great musicians have come through him. So yeah. he must have, like, learned so much as well as, like, giving all the information he has.
Yeah, I would love to hear it. He's on the naughty list at the moment. Along with Martin France and Nicky Isles.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I know. Of, like, you know. Oh, yeah. Oh, Jason, actually. He asked me if he could come on the show.
Oh, you should definitely do
it. I know. And then when I emailed him, he was like, this is your idea, you know. So, those four, they need to check their emails because it's obviously not gone well for me, actually. Oh, that's cool. So how does 3 years with Les change you as a human and as a pianist?
Wow. Just, just how he's such a great teacher in terms of, like, yeah, as a person and musically as well. He's one of those teachers that is quite rare. He teaches you how to teach yourself.
Yeah.
And yeah, just being able to study with him and learn from him for the 3 years, it was amazing. Just going through jazz and classical repertoire simultaneously, it was amazing. And I think someone like Les as well, he definitely sees... He hears your sound before you hear it. So he kind of points you in that direction.
Oh, that's so good. What a great way to describe a teacher.
Yeah, man.
That's amazing. Because it is like Les's students, to me, everyone is a very like individual, you know, nobody sounds like Les. They just all sound really like their own voice, like you say, which is for me, like the best thing any jazz educator could ever hope for, I think.
Yeah,
you know,
I mean, you wouldn't think that he taught both Gwilym Simcock and John Escrete, like both completely different pianists, like, but both amazing, but you wouldn't think that they come through the same teacher.
Yeah, that's great. That's such a good example.
Yeah.
Yes.
It's crazy to think.
Yeah, totally. So then after Leeds, what were you... Did you have any grand plans?
No, to be honest, I didn't have any grand plans. All I knew is that I was going to go back to London for a little bit and, you know, see what's going on down there because I've been away for 3 years.
Yeah.
So towards the end, right at the end of my studies, I got the Yamaha Jazz Scholarship. And then part of that was you had to record an original composition in this studio in Manchester. And that
is that the Yamaha thing where they pick like six people?
Yeah,
one they from each one, college.
Yeah, they pick one person from each college, and then they like record an original composition, and then that gets put on like this compilation CD that gets put out on Jazzwise.
Yeah.
So yeah, I recorded a tune for that, and yeah, moving down, and we did this like this concert at like the Houses of Parliament with like guys from all the other colleges, Scott Chapman, Mark Lewandowski, and Tom Dennis, a few others. And yeah, it was great. And yeah, so I did that whilst moving down, and then at the same time going to like loads of different jam sessions and getting my name out there. So I didn't know how busy I was going to be once I moved down. So as soon as I moved down, you know, I started getting calls from like older musicians that I looked up to and always wanted to play with and learn from. And then at the same time, my solo stuff kind of started happening by accident. Cause, I think it was, I got booked for a spot at like, Jazzin' Around.
Yeah.
And then I, after doing the Yamaha Jazz Scholarship thing, I got asked to do a slot on Jazzin' Around. So obviously Jez Nelson was there. So I did a set of like, you know, half standards, like a couple of original tunes.
Yeah.
So that's all I had at the time. And then, yeah, Jez took that recording I had from the Yamaha CD, and he submitted it on the BBC introducing thing. And then from there, things kind of started to happen organically, really. He played my stuff on the radio, and yeah, he selected me to, he put me forward for the Manchester Jazz Festival thing and things
like
that.
Is that like the new emerging artists thing that they do? Or
So they get like some UK bands and they put them on this BBC introducing thing for a live broadcast and for this gig in Band on the Wall.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that was like amazing. And so yeah, and then like for my stuff, I do one gig and then that leads to another gig and another opportunity, then to another opportunity. Then as the gigs went by, I was writing more and more music because the set times got longer. So I was like, I think I need some more music. So yeah, and then that was happening simultaneous whilst like gigging with like Shaney Forbes regularly. And at the time I was doing Charlie Wright's every Tuesday. Rest in peace, Charlie Wright.
Yeah, I used to love that place.
We were doing like a regular slot at Ronnie's for the Late Show. Jay Phelps, then I started playing with Jean Toussaint. And so, yeah, it was kind of like a snowball effect. I was just, yeah, things just started happening. And at the same time, I was doing my master's at the academy. So it was pretty full on.
Man, that's great. That must have been insanely busy because that course is enough to do on its own.
Yeah, literally. I was doing college during the day and then going to a gig in the evening. And I'm sure that at some point when you interview Nikki, she'll tell you about how I was like falling asleep in class because I'd be in Ronnie's till like 3 a.m. and then go straight to college or something like that. Yeah,
man,
it was crazy.
Brutal.
Yeah, it was crazy. But
such a great time, though. I mean, you must have absorbed so much, you know, from being so immersed, like literally all day, every day.
Yeah, it was crazy. It was absolutely crazy. But I'll do it all again, though.
Yeah.
Yeah, I wouldn't trade it for anything.
How long were you at Academy for?
So I did the master's program for 2 years.
Oh, amazing. In 2014.
Yeah, 2014 to 2016. Yeah, it was a good time. It was a good time to be there. I had like even more amazing teachers, and just being in that environment, like just being surrounded by so many like exceptional young musicians, it was, yeah, never took it for granted. It was amazing.
Yeah. I think that's one of the things about being a, if you're, you know, as a postgrad, it's easier to appreciate how ridiculously lucky you are to be in that surrounding.
Oh, definitely, definitely.
Yeah, my God. So you've done a couple of albums since you left.
I have, yeah.
That period.
Yeah, a couple of records. So off the back of the Manchester Jazz Festival thing, after that I had some live recordings now.
Yeah.
So I put them, I have them to myself, I put them up on SoundCloud, and then Jamie Cullum actually takes one of those live recordings and plays it on his show. And I was doing this play at this time. At the
How
time.
Did that happen? Did he just trip over it? Or?
Yeah, I think when your stuff gets played on BBC, other DJs have access to it.
Right.
So they'll maybe like come across and be like, oh, I'll have that, play it on my show. Then, you know. Yeah, so that's literally how it happened. And then during that time, I was doing this play at Wilton's Music Hall for like 2 months. And one of the actors there, he works at this, he's a voiceover actor, American dude called John Chancellor. He does a lot of voiceover acting at this studio called Sonica Studios.
Right.
So the owner of that studio's wife heard me on Jamie Cullum's show. It was like, oh, like, listen to this guy. You need to get him down at some point. So they came down to watch John perform in his play, and then we met afterwards. And then they literally were like, do you want a day of free studio time to record this professionally in the studio?
Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah. So
so you were like, yeah.
I was to literally record everything that I had at the time.
Yeah.
In one day, just press record, go. So
how'd you pick your band for that?
How did I pick my band?
Was it really easy? Did you kind of already know?
It was kind of easy because when I was at the East College of Music, I had the same rhythm section and they moved down to London with me at the time.
Oh, amazing.
Yeah, so we just kept playing together from the end of Leeds up till then, really. And it was great. So yeah, we were just up for recording and like, yeah, just having fun with it, really.
Who is this rhythm section you speak of?
I had Sam Gardner and Sam Vickery.
Right.
So right before that recording session, I think like 3 weeks before, we do a gig at Jazz Refreshed in Mau Mau Bar.
Yeah.
They like offered me a slot after like a last minute cancellation they had or something like that. So we were like, yeah, let's do it. So do the gig. Then Adam from Jazz Refresh was like, oh man, you guys going in the studio anytime soon? And I was like, well, actually, having you said that, we got some studio time for one day in December. And he was like, oh, do you want to release it with us? You know, explore some possibilities of doing that. And yeah, so yeah, a couple meetings later, we decided to release the recording session I had with Sonica with Jazz Refreshed, and that's how that came about. So it kind of happened organically, and just the timing was just so insanely right.
it
was insane. So yeah, before I know it, I've got a record out and vinyls and things like that. And yeah.
Did that change anything, like career-wise, you know, like before and after putting that album out?
I think, yeah, definitely, without a doubt. I mean, the way Jazz Refresh kind of put it all together, it's like they did a EPK for me, and, you know, Jazz Refresh already have this reputation of releasing great albums from, like, Richard Spavin, Kylie Tatham. So that kind of vibe, and so it was kind of, it was interesting for them to like release a acoustic jazz trio album.
Yeah, great.
Because that kind of, it kind of put them in, not in a different thing, but it was kind of just like, you know, where this is like kind of like half and half. It's kind of like it's still rooted in a tradition, but it's still got something fresh to it. So, and just the way they put it forward was amazing, and it kind of introduced me to a whole different group of people, really. It was amazing. And just having out on vinyl, that kind of puts it in a different thing as well.
And
from then I started doing different shows and a few festivals here and there, so yeah, just kept it moving, really. It's
and you've got a second album as well, is that right?
Yes, I do. So fast forwarding a year and a bit, I recorded this EP again, like a year after I recorded the Jazz Refreshed EP.
Yeah.
And I was kind of moving into like a different stage of my life, and I finished the academy and
slowing down a bit, getting older.
Yeah, exactly. I saw my music going in a slightly different direction, and I wanted to, just kind of explore that, really. So I got a new different rhythm section in again, and different musicians, and I was really into, I wanted to explore more of my influences, because obviously going back to the Stevie thing, I'm really into songwriting and arranging.
Yeah.
So kind of like taking songs and like taking them apart and putting my own spin on it. So that kind of, just goes from what I did from when I was a child up till now. So I recorded this EP, and what happened after that? Crazy. So I recorded this EP, and then, and then I ended up signing to Sony Records.
Man, how did that come about? That's fantastic. I didn't know that. I'd forgotten.
So that happened.
So did they release your second album?
Yeah, so that EP I recorded, they wanted to release that too.
Right.
As well as the album I'm about to put out. So that kind of that happened organically as well. This one of the guys from Sony, he helps with the strategy, a guy called Fred Bolzer. He's seen me, we've seen each other around and like different gigs that I've done, like playing with different people.
Yeah.
And after this one time we exchanged details, and he took my manager's details and wanted to know more about me and my sound and my music and where I saw myself going. Because obviously having a Jazz Refreshed thing out, that kind of put me on the map to a few, like people were aware of what I was doing and that I had some new music recorded. There were like rumors going around that, I had some new stuff coming, and Fred just wanted to like explore that a bit more. So like after negotiations and stuff, I ended up signing a deal with them, and they really liked what was recorded so far, like the Easter EP. So yeah, that's how it happened, really.
That's so cool. So then I guess with Sony, there's like, they must have powers of distribution that would make your head spin as an individual,
Yes. it's just a great opportunity to be able to spread UK jazz on a major platform.
Yeah.
And hopefully that will expose more people to like so much other great music that's going on the UK jazz scene.
Yeah.
And that's kind of the aim, really, more than anything else.
Man, and also as the maker of the beloved PlayStation 4, I'd love to be on Sony. I feel so at home.
Yeah, exactly. That's the first thing I asked, like, before I signed, like, do you think you could
hook me up, yeah. Yeah, oh my God, that's so good. Some kind of endorsement. I'd love that on the inside of the album if it's like Ashley Henry plays PlayStation 4.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, sweet. So I've looked on your website. There's some really cool gigs coming up in the in the calendar. It looks like you get to get around a bit. There was, you played in Austin in March.
Yeah, so the Jazz for Fresh guys took me out to Austin, Texas for the South by Southwest Festival, yeah. Which was, yeah, it was incredible. Lovely, lovely festival. Great people. It's a great team of people to go out there with as well. Moses Boyd, Nubia, Blue Lab Beats, Ezra Collective. It was, yeah, Zara McFarlane, who I also played with out there. So it was, yeah, it was such a great atmosphere. And it was a great night as well, the actual showcase.
Yeah.
Like, everyone really pulled out the bag and was like, you know, felt that they had to represent for London and for the UK, you know, because there's so much great music happening here. So, you know, it's our job to let people know what's going on over here. You know what I mean?
Yeah, totally.
Yeah. So it's,
that is really cool.
It's really fun. Really, really fun.
And then, what's the date today? Oh, it's the, yeah. So you've already played in Paris as well.
Yeah.
It's such an international list. It's beautiful.
Yes. Yeah, it's a good time for jazz right now. I mean, after having the EP being released in January, it's good to know that a lot more people are checking my music out. And
yeah.
Yeah, it's a good time right now. It's I feel really blessed.
So tell us, what, if any, because as a musician, I understand that the answer might be none. What are your hobbies outside of playing the piano?
Still really into my basketball. I still watch that when I can and play it sometimes.
When you're watching, what are you watching? Like NBA or?
Yeah, NBA.
Amazing.
Yeah, man. Yeah, hobbies outside music. I still like to try my best to keep my body right, keep my mind right. So a lot of reading and exercising, like swimming and stuff like that. So yeah man, just appreciating the simple things, really.
That sounds real good.
Yeah, it kind of just keeps me grounded and, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it's been a pleasure to sit and talk.
Oh, likewise. Thank you for having me.
Yeah. Have I missed anything? Any glaring omissions at this point? Because as you could probably sense, as the listeners, I fear, sense, the research notes that I work off of are not always as comprehensive as they could be.
Yeah, I'll be at Rich Mix Friday, 18th of May in London.
Oh, great. That's fabulous news. What are you doing there?
I'm playing there with my project. So it's my first gig in London since the new EP being released. So going to be playing that and some brand new material, which will be on the album later on this year. So yeah.
Beautiful.
It's going to be fun and it's going to be a journey. It's going to be good. Looking forward to it.
Sick. Well, thank you so much for coming on the Jazz Podcast. It has been our pleasure.
Always. Thank you.
Right. I'm going to go and wrestle with my cat for a bit.
No worries. Mood.
Yeah. All right. Sweet. So we'll speak to you soon.
Yeah. Cheers, Rob.
So there you have it. Next week is going to be Alex Hitchcock. We're going to preview his brand new album and check out some of the tunes. So that'll be fun. And
Rob.
Yeah.
I met someone on a gig recently.
Ooh.
Who was the winner of one of our contests.
Wow. That's fantastic. Who was it?
I can't remember his name. He was a piano player. It was really nice.
Yes, I remember.
And he won
sending
an album, I think.
Did he win the Brass Funkies album?
That was the one. Yeah, that guy.
Yeah.
What was his name?
I can't remember.
Very nice. Obviously, anyway, it was quite funny.
That's so great, considering that when we talk about low percentages and the Jazz Podcast, the number of people that have won competitions is
it's huge, isn't it?
Yeah, enormous. Huge. We've sent literally several CDs to people.
Mm. Are you doing a new album, Rob?
Yes. Yes.
Oh, great. Talk about it.
I shall tell you right now, because no one else will be listening.
Can we do a competition to win a copy of it?
Yes. But actually, that's a great idea. It's to celebrate the 50th anniversary of the moon landing.
Yeah.
And it's been
that needs celebrating.
That does. That's something everyone's looking out for.
Yeah.
It's on Ubuntu Records, which is a label I've kind of figured out, you know, through doing this show. And we've done quite a few album launches where the guests were on there. And so I just thought I'd be like, hello.
So we can do an album preview show.
Yes. Oh, that's going to be so good. We'll do an album preview show all about me and the album. And we can make up incredibly irritating space-related questions.
Yeah.
Things that are difficult to Google because, you know, we want to bring back the integrity of the competition.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
Great. Well, I look forward to it.
Yeah, perfect. And if you are still listening and you're itching for more competitions, just tweet us. We are the Jazz Podcast, unsurprisingly. We've temporarily...
That's not going to happen, is it?
No, it won't happen. We've discontinued the competitions on the basis that nobody entered the last one.
Maybe it's just we weren't offering good enough prizes. No offense to the Brass Funkers.
That's a great reason why.
Yeah.
Yes, I love it. Okay, perfect.
Maybe your album isn't much more of a selling point to enter, but
that's interesting, Dan. We might have to get some better prizes.
Yeah.
Oh man.
Oh dear.
Okay, perfect. Well,
great. Well, good to chat to you.
It's been a pleasure, and we'll see you next week.
Yeah.
Was that a car horn?
That was a car horn. Yeah.
Well, great timing. Yeah. I heard that. See you next week. Beep!